Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I'm coming at you from snowy Toronto, Canada, and I hope that wherever it is you are listening right now, the weather is as pleasant or more pleasant than it is in front of me as we speak. All right, we got a great show for you today, so what do you say? Let's get into it. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today started out with a PhD in chemical engineering and moved on to receiving his MBA from Harvard Business School. Then, in 2008, he became partner at the number one VC firm in the world, Sequoia Capital, where he spent the next 8 years as lead investor and a board member for billion-dollar companies. And then he walked away from it all. He is now the co-founder and CEO of Empower, an app that helps entrepreneurs and side hustlers stay on top of their finances. Now, let's hack Warren Hogarth. I'm really excited to share this conversation with you because I know Warren has a ton of value that he can share with you. And he can do this even though he's working and has worked with massive, massive companies. And it's not always what we're doing. It might not be what you're trying to do. It's not what I'm trying to do. I'm all about the creation of something out of nothing. I'm about creating a side hustle, letting it build and build until it takes over your business. And you're going to hear Warren talk about some insane statistics for the world and how it's moving towards side hustles. So before we get going, I want to talk to you about Fiverr. I strongly believe that Fiverr is the best marketplace available for solo entrepreneurs and side hustlers like you and me. And no matter what stage of the business or brand growth you're in, Fiverr is where you need to go to create something out of nothing. And today, for being a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you can join the already millions of entrepreneurs who have built their businesses using Fiverr by visiting fiverr.com/HTE. That's fiverr.com/HTE. And if you use promo code HTE20, you will get 20% off your first Fiverr purchase. Once again, that's fiverr.com/HTE. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very, very special guest, Warren. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, John. It's wonderful to be here.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. And I think we're going to have a lot of fun. So what do you say? Should we jump into it?
Let's do it.
Excellent. Warren, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Well, I think one thing I do is probably more than anything is I try and keep a very open mind about the possibilities of the future. A lot of that has meant that I've met some very interesting people along the way that have then help set me up for success. But if I think about my own journey, so I grew up in Brisbane, Australia, and I was a chemical engineer. My dad was a chemical engineer. I was going to go and design oil refineries around the world. I went to a presentation from a professor on a very sort of moment. I heard this presentation. It was about, this is 2002. It's a little while ago now, about the future of nanotechnology and biotechnology. And I always had this sort of entrepreneurial bug, and I'm like, wow, that sounds really special. I think the future is going to change a lot. It's going to be very different. And do I want to go into a career where I'm going to be doing the same thing basically for 40 years in industry that's kind of very well established, or do I want to go into spaces that are sort of very dynamic and changing? And, you know, that was a catalyst. Like literally the next day I went and applied to go do a PhD and do research. You fast forward many years through my career, I swore I'd never do an MBA, and then I ended up doing an MBA because I kept an open mind, despite not thinking I would do one. Then I ended up in venture capital, even though I I really, really wanted to do a startup, but this, you know, very serendipitous opportunity came up and it seemed crazy not to do it. And then fast forward a bit later on, my co-founder, who's had a big impact on the company, I met through some mutual friends who'd sort of set up this event in Jackson Hole to go skiing and meet interesting entrepreneurs. And I'm like, it seems more like a boondoggle, but hey, I was working on ideas at the time and had a bit of free time. And then you end up meeting your co-founder. It's really sort of trying to keep an open mind and make some space to meet some special people.
Okay, that's this massive, huge journey you just covered. So from from following in your father's footsteps as a chemical engineer to just seeing in 2002, seeing a professor speak and then instantly a PhD, go for a PhD after, then an MBA at Harvard, and then into becoming a venture capitalist in America.
Yeah.
Like you kind of glossed over a few major a few major things. I love this idea that you keep an open mind, but it's like this isn't like The Secret or something where if you just hope for it, it will happen. Like you've either obviously always putting yourself in the right place at the right time with the right credentials behind you, or you've gotten really lucky. I don't know. What is it?
I think luck always plays a big role, but it's chance favors the prepared mind, I think, is a saying I've heard along the way. And I mean, so if you take when I was doing my MBA, I was really keen to just immerse myself and meet as many people in the startup ecosystem as I could. So I would fly out to California and crash on a friend's couch and meet as many people as I could. And the way I would do it is I'd send all these emails out to people saying, hey, I'm actually going to be in California for a meeting in a week or in 2 weeks. Hey, can I just stop by for 30 minutes and grab a cup of coffee? Even though I hadn't booked my ticket, you know, but it was, you know, a little bit of this forcing function. And if people thought I'd be out there and was making a special trip, and then if I couldn't get enough meetings together, you know, I'd send a polite note saying, unfortunately, my travels changed, but how about this day? It is about that sort of hustle and doing those things. And but if you can get in front of the right people and always before any meeting, know your audience, have the one or two asks that you have, what you want to get out of a conversation, and people will respect that. I think that's one part. And the other part is just making sure you always have a long-term view of the world. So as I said, even when this was when I was back in college and I went to see this professor, it was sort of step back and like, what would I do 40-year career? And definitely some short-term sacrifice, both through the PhD and the MBA. I had a lot of side hustles, but I'd never worked a full-time job and added another 3.5 years for a PhD and 2 years for an MBA before getting my first real full-time salary. But that paid huge dividends that investing in myself and my education and the relationships. And obviously also while you're studying, it just people are more open to taking meetings with you. It's a great way to sort of say, hey, I'm a student, just love to pay it. Could you pay it effectively? You don't say this explicitly, but could you pay it forward and take a meeting with me and help me out and help me understand some things so I can continue to learn.
So this long-term sort of view of the world, is this like you seeing where everything was going? As a Canadian, there's the Wayne Gretzky saying of don't go where the puck is, go where it's going. Is this sort of your thinking? And especially as you worked through with so many massive startups with Sequoia, like not looking to take an opportunity right now, but what's coming?
So venture capital is a very interesting lens. So I spent 8 years at Sequoia Capital where we were the early investors in Google and LinkedIn and Airbnb and Dropbox and Instacart more recently as an example. Our goal is to invest in 3 or 4 people when it's an idea, but ideally when it's sort of no more than 2 years away from market. So you kind of want to be ahead of the pack, but not too far ahead of the pack. And I think that's not a bad sort of, it depends what you want to do. If you want to be a researcher all your life, you can be sort of multiple years ahead of the pack. And it's a very fulfilling career. And many of my friends did PhDs and became professors. For me, it's sort of, I have a sort of a voracious appetite for learning. Being early into a market means you can learn quickly. It allows you to make mistakes and not look stupid, if that's important. And then by getting sort of the upswing of like new markets, for example, it just means you often go through this crazy learning curve. It means that you're often ahead of the pack and everyone else is playing catch up. And it's just really fun. So, and it's one of these things that things change quickly. And you also in some ways get to be part of inventing the future. That's my adrenaline run, that rush. That's my kick.
And then working with these massive companies that have gone on to change markets, change the world in their ways, what after 8 years drove you to start your own company?
So I had my first child just before I left. And that was sort of one of these catalyst sort of decision points for me. I was about 7 years in at that point, and I had gone through this massive learning curve. This early days is really an apprenticeship model, and then you get to sort of lead investments and go on all of these boards and what have you and help all of these very interesting entrepreneurs. But I still had this deep desire to sort of do it for myself. So as an investor in early stage companies, it's kind of like being the coach or the quarterback. You have founders, your goal is to, how do you make these people as successful as they can be by sort of drawing on all of the collective wisdom of the firm, having seen patterns and things happen over and over and having recruited many people, et cetera. How do you help them grow and impart that wisdom? But at the end of the day, they're responsible for the final call, the yes, the no. And so they have to own the good and the bad. And I wanted to go back and have that experience again. I'd had a little bit of it early on in my career. Again, having a family makes you think very hard about these things. 7.5 years is a good run. Take the next 7.5 years as a journey. We'll see what will happen. Now, I want to continue to do that personally throughout my career. I might go back into investing one day in the future. I might do something else. It sort of keeps me on my toes.
Yeah, I would think it does. And is the idea of Empower Finance, is that sort of going where the puck is going?
I hope so. You never exactly know, but you learn the sort of pattern matching when you've been doing investing at a place like Sequoia for that long. You know, we see a few thousand companies a year. We invest in one or two on an individual basis and about 10 as a firm. And then you see these companies grow. And for me, the pattern matching was, we have a generation, a millennial generation, that is poorly served by the existing financial system, especially with a US lens where underwriting is just, it's completely broken. You have to have borrowed money to be able to get money in the future. You're penalized if you don't get a credit card, even if you may have great cash flow. The top banks in the US are amongst the least loved brands by millennials, so the trust is at an all-time low. And yet we have, from a consumer point of view, from an artificial intelligence, machine learning, the ability to put in software all of the heuristics and information to analyze a user's data and help them make great decisions. And banks aren't doing that. No one's delivering that as a consumer product so people can save. They're often leaving hundreds to thousands of dollars a year on the table. And then from an infrastructure point of view, I had seen a number of interesting fintech companies be built from scratch, one called Stripe, another one called Square, another one called Klarna and Prosper. And I've seen some of the walled gardens of the banking institutions in the US start to break down because we're starting to build APIs, sort of the IT pipes between banks, so that an app like ours can take in all of the information. We can do all of the machine learning and algorithms on top to make recommendations to help people get ahead, just like anyone had their own private banker or private financial advisor. And then if we gave someone a recommendation like, hey, you should refinance your loan because your credit score went up, or hey, you have a little bit of extra cash, why don't we pay down your debt? In two taps, you could take action on that. You didn't have to then go off somewhere, remember a password, click through 15 screens, forget why you were there. And so it's just, how do you create this seamless experience that existing technology companies aren't doing, millennials really want, and finally startups can deliver because these pipes are being connected?
Yeah. And so is it this idea that like millennials are sort of poorly served and underserved in these areas by the institutions that exist, the big old sort of dinosaur institutions? But is it also that like millennials have these side hustle opportunities, and like the economy is changing and the way people are earning money is changing rapidly?
It's fundamentally changing, and it is a very big part of it. So the stats are that within 2 years, 50% of millennials will have some kind of side hustle. If you think of that from a finance point of view, what does that do? It means generally like the volatility or the uncertainty of your income increases. It means you have to do more tax planning because you have to put more away for taxes. It also means that it's basically impossible to get a loan, at least in the US, because in addition to your credit score, they look to say, hey, do you have 2 years of W-2 or employee income? And if you don't tick that box, they say, hey, you're no luck. And it just makes things far more complicated. And then you probably have business expenses you want to take as tax write-offs or what have you as well. On the other hand, if you like just stop for a minute and you say, hey, what's better? If you've been what is now unfortunate, perhaps, and let's say you've been at Sears for or whatever large company X for 16 years, the economy dips, and so they decide to lay off 10% of the workforce. Unfortunately, you're probably in a much more difficult position than the person that's got side hustles because you haven't had to go out and sell yourself into a new career. New employers don't look at it as favorably. You're probably in a quite a difficult position where the person that has multiple side hustles can take the buffer. If one of them ends, they've got other sources of income. They've had to go and sell their services. So they know how to hustle for more. And arguably, I think they're more employable. The financial system is penalizing you. But on the other hand, I think you're in a much, much better situation if you look at things from sort of a very rational point of view. We really want to provide something that addresses and actually rewards people who have a side hustle.
Yeah, I've spent my whole life like dealing with banks and having like being self-employed the whole time and it was always like frowned upon. It's like in every other aspect of life, it's not frowned upon except for when you need help.
When I left Sequoia, I went to refinance our home and basically all the banks just straight away said no, because I was at this point, I'm trying to bootstrap a startup company and they looked at me as if I was like something poisonous. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. 2 weeks ago, you would have lent me money. Nothing has fundamentally changed about sort of who I am. And yet now all of a sudden you won't even have a discussion about it. It's just a flat out no. And I was just blown away.
So you are bootstrapped as Empower?
We bootstrapped it. We're now about 18 months into the journey of Empower. We bootstrapped the company for about 4 or 5 months. And then we were fortunate to raise venture capital funding from Sequoia Capital and a handful of other very well-known investors.
Oh, that's helpful.
It has been very helpful.
Does that then give you the opportunity to have these people on your board and these advisors leading your charge ahead?
Yeah, it certainly allows me to bring them in and have them as consiglieres of the business and pick their brains on everything from growth to recruiting to hiring great engineers or making architectural decisions. And that's something that's just, people are at the heart of all of these things. I can't make all these decisions myself. I'm certainly not an expert in all of these areas. And so it's so important for me as I think about building out the business.
Let's take a moment here in the conversation to discuss how Warren says that it's so hard for him to, we can't have all the answers. And so it's so important to listen when you are building out your business. According to CB Insights, the data on the top 20 reasons why startups fail is because they don't have a market need, which means that nobody in the business was asking the right questions to the right people. You need to not fall for that mistake too. With Typeform. Typeform is versatile. You can use it at every stage of your funnel, and the results don't lie. Typeform has a 57% completion rate on surveys, which goes absolutely against the industry average of just 20%. That's more data for you to play with to make the right decisions. And right now, you can sign up for free today with a special offer for you as a Hack the Entrepreneur listener. You can upgrade to their pro and you'll get 30% off for the first 6 months. Go here to get started for free today. Go to typeform.com/hack. That's typeform.com/hack. Remember, when collecting data, rule number one is put the people first, the data second. And ironically enough, you'll get all the data you could possibly need. All right, let's get back to the conversation. So let's move on to projects. So projects within Empower, I'm assuming you're not taking on other projects at this point, especially with new kids around and also a new company. But I would love to know, what is the process that you're going through now as the co-founder and CEO of Empower Finance? When ideas comes for new projects, whether it's a marketing or a product project, but what's the process that you're going through right now to determine that a project is worth not only yours, but your team's time, energy, and resources?
Wow. It's a very, I mean, that's probably a third of my time. And I think as a leader and CEO is one of the most important things. I mean, we run very lean. So we're still quite small. We're 7 people. And we certainly can't do everything we want to do. We maniacally prioritize. We sort of have certain heuristics that we use. So we have some very specific short-term goals. So the way we generally plan the business is we look at sort of like a yearly goal, what we would like to achieve. We look at sort of a quarterly goal, and then we chunk that down even further. Just to give you a sense, last quarter, we wanted to finish our Android app and get that released. We wanted to generate the first revenue in the business, and we achieved that. And then those sort of were the sort of very near-term projects. And then there's investment in sort of mid-term projects where we're investigating, you know, launching some loan products specifically focused on millennials with Side Hustle who typically can't get loans. And we wanted to do the early investment in that to be able to make a go, no-go decision. And so we sort of chunk things up into very sort of critical priorities for the business, as well as some of this long-term investing. And then it's, for me, it's about time allocation, and about 2/3 of everyone's time is focused on those near-term goals. And we try then also to make sure that some chunk of the time, 20 to 30% is focused on investing in those mid to long-term goals. And we revisit them. I mean, I think about them at least on a weekly basis, if not more frequently.
You think about them on a weekly basis. Can they change that rapidly?
Some of the shorter term ones can change, like they can shuffle up and down the board depending on sort of what we learn from a metrics point of view. So we often do a release of our product every 2 to 4 weeks, and you know, we get very rapid feedback. We're very analytical in sort of measuring the performance of all of the changes we do for the product. In the short term, we can certainly dial things up and down. On those midterm pieces, again, because it's a startup, you learn new information, again, sort of weekly, even daily sometimes, that can influence that thinking. You don't want to change the high-level priority back and forth too much, otherwise it's too much whipsawing on the team. So I certainly think about it, and I'm taking in those data points quite regularly. On those medium and longer-term goals, though, we're very cautious before making a big change, prioritize one above the other.
And as CEO, how do you sort of split your priorities, like you personally and what you're thinking on, between product and like user acquisition?
Wow. You know, another topic that is, I'd say, just generally very dynamic. So early on for me, before we had a product or before we released the product, obviously it was sort of like 80%, 90% product. These days it's probably about 40% product, where I'm at the highest level, again, helping set the direction and provide very specific feedback, but try and push more of the day-to-day down to some folks on my team. And then a big chunk of my time now is spent on customer acquisition, but they do very much go hand in hand, because product is about sort of how much people engage and retain. It's how people onboard and come down your funnel. So that very much influences customer acquisition cost, and even just whether people really want the product in the first place. So they're tied hand in hand very closely. But right now our focus is on, you know, we have a big focus on growth. So that's where more of my time has been biased recently.
Fair enough. And like you said, like everything else, it's just very dynamic and fluid.
Yeah. And part of it is team. We hired a phenomenal person to lead growth about 4 months ago, and she's now much more up to speed with the company and the product. Again, I can push down more of the day-to-day, or push that out, I should say, to her. And you know, I feel very good about the ownership, the reporting and analytics and all of the pieces that come around that as well.
I love it. Warren, this has been an absolute blast. I do want to thank you, but I would like to wrap up on one final question for you, if I could.
Sure.
It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. Something I've noticed after interviewing 400 entrepreneurs now on this show is that as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, we always are pushing, it seems, our personal and our business success into the future. So when you hit that revenue metric in 1 month or that user acquisition metric in 6 months, whatever it happens to be, you and I both know that right before you hit that, there's going to be bigger, loftier goals into the future. And yes, we need to push forward. But for right now, I would like it if you could stop and turn around and look behind you. You've come a long ways. I mean, since going to be a chemical engineer, to seeing that professor speak to through Sequoia and now to your own business. Could you just tell me how you feel about the highs, the lows, the wins, and the losses? And just tell me how you feel about this whole crazy journey up until today.
You're right. There is this thing, I think, for people that are very driven that you sort of, you never want to rest on your laurels. So looking back, I look back and think, would I change anything? And for me, the short answer is no, despite the highs and the lows, or despite the lows, which most people might see. I mean, for me, it was, again, I stopped trying to plan too much in the future. I just tried to do what I thought was the best with that kind of long-term mindset. If there's some new topic that I'm personally passionate about, to someone I want to meet, I always try and carve out some percentage of my time, 20%, 10% of my time, to just continue to make space for learning and meeting people. And I feel like if I do that, then good things will come. And I say personally, the other big change for me is I think a lot changed when I had my first child, and I now have two kids. And I think that also does, for me, sort of allow me to compartmentalize more than I had in the past, where I do have this sort of other counterweight or balance, which is my family. And I really enjoy the highs and the lows. But I think having family puts a little bit more of that in perspective, so the lows don't feel quite as bad or as rough, or personally like there was a personal failure. The highs still feel pretty nice, but they're still not quite as good as when your child makes some kind of big developmental leap or something crazy like that. So for me, it's sort of, from the journey point of view, it's sort of that more of the same. It's trying to view things with a long term. If things don't work out this time around, there's a good chance that'll work out the next time if I continue to learn. And I feel like I'm always sort of doing that investment in myself, and also some investment in that learning, and also paying it forward a little bit for others. So that's my reflection, I suppose.
Beautiful answer. I love it. Warren, we've got to talk about Empower throughout this conversation. Could you now specifically tell the listener what Empower is, who it can help, and then where you can track it down online?
Certainly. So Empower is a financial app for Android or iOS that helps you get the best out of all of your finances. It's like having a personal financial advisor or a planner that's always looking over your money. It's giving you very personalized recommendations on how you can get ahead. Now, average users are saving a few hundred to a few thousand dollars a year that they wouldn't have otherwise been saving. And it allows you to do that in a seamless experience so that you can focus on your business or your side hustle or just on life and be very comfortable knowing that Empower's in the background and taking care of your financial back. And you can get it on, as I said, on iOS or on Android if you search for Empower or Empower Finance. And you can check us out online, empower.me, or you can shoot me any questions on Twitter or what have you. I'm at Warren Hogarth.
There we go. Empower.me is the site, but you can find it in your app stores. At Warren Hogarth on Twitter, and I will track down a LinkedIn as well for you if you want to see more of what Warren's been up to and what he is doing in the future. You can track him down there and ask him some questions on Twitter. Warren, once again, thank you so much for stopping by. Thanks for sharing so honestly and openly. I really do appreciate it. And I don't know, just keep doing what you're doing because it is really awesome to watch.
Thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, that was just a lot of fun. It really is not very often that I get to talk to a world-class venture capitalist turned entrepreneur. But I have to say, Warren did not let me down. As always, we covered a lot of things. And also, as always, we've reached my favorite part of the show. The part where I get to go back through the conversation, listen to exactly what Warren said, and find that one thing. And I did that. Are you ready? All right, let's do it. Let's find the hack.
But if you can get in front of the right people, and always before any meeting, know your audience, have the one or two asks that you have, what you want to get out of a conversation, and people will respect that.
And that's the hack. Warren, Warren, Warren. I love this. I think I love this, especially because you are somebody who has been pitched so many times. You are from Sequoia Capital previously. You know what it takes. But you out there listening, this isn't just if you were going to approach the top VC firm in the world. That's kind of not what we need to be talking about. This is approaching people via email, sitting down with them to coffee, going to their office, whatever that may be. Follow these steps that Warren says. Number one, know your audience. Know who they are. It's so easy. Go on LinkedIn, go on Facebook, find the person, find out what they've written lately, what they've done, what they're working on. It's not that hard to find. And then find your one or two asks. What are the things that you want to ask? And then also, like, what is it you want to get out of the conversation? It really is that easy. And again, this goes for you emailing somebody. Make it concise, know who you're speaking to, and know what you're asking. If you just want to go for coffee and get to meet people, by all means, but you still need to know your audience, and that can be the goal of your conversation. To network, to meet more people, that's fine. You don't have to always ask for them to do something for you. That can be enough. But you need to know that going into it. Don't go into it blind, and don't go into it not knowing who the person is, what they're into, and what they're up to. Warren, thank you so very, very much. All right, well, I had an absolute blast. Again, thank you so much for stopping by. I've been doing some housekeeping, if you will, around the office. I found three copies of my favorite book. It's called, it's not how good you are, it's how good you want to be. I actually gave it away to my first 100 guests on the show. And now, passing 400, I'd like to give you a copy. Absolutely free. Paperback, brand new book from me. I found three copies. Email me, john@hacktheentrepreneur.com, name, address, and if you'd like the book, I'll send it to you. Why not? All right, first three people. There's only three. But if you're hearing this and you would like it, drop me that email and or go to the contact form on hacktheentrepreneur.com if you can't remember my name and email address. All right. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really, truly do appreciate it. I'm glad you stuck till the end because you possibly just got yourself a book. But anyways, it's been fun. Let's do it again, shall we? And please, until then, keep hacking the entrepreneur.